Maybe it's a hemshech from last week's vad, like Dhamma to this week's vad. There's a certain yid was sentenced to death by the Tsar's government, and they gave him a last request. I don't know where that comes from, but anyway, someone wants to track down the core of the last request. So he asked to spend. His last request, he wanted to spend the Purim Suda. It was Purim, and he wanted to be at the Purim Suda of the Abtarov, the Oiv Yisrael. So he had to leave a mashkin. Obviously, they wouldn't let him go, but his brother stayed in the cell until he came back. And he went to the Suda of the Abtarov, and he told the Rav what was going on. He'd been sentenced to death and whatever. This was his last meal, whatever. And the Abtarov turned to his son, and he said, The Abtarov had a very royal court. He set himself up as a very covered dictator, very, very opulent environment that he lived in. And he said to his son, do you know why it is that I'm rizoiche to such wonderful gashmias? Of course, for him it wasn't gashmias, but the royalty of this court, he says, is because the Eibishter knows that I don't have a chelek in Olam Haba. So whatever schus I have, he has to pay me out in Olam Hazeh. I don't have a Lama Ba and I'm entitled to Lama Ze. What kind of a Lama Ze can I have if this Yid sitting at must put him to the sentence to death? So one of the tzaddikim at the Suda turned around and said that was pshat with Esther. When Esther said, Ki avodati avodati, I know that I've lost my chedek and Lama Ba. I went Barotzen to Achashverosh. What kind of a Lama Ze, and therefore I'm entitled to Lama Ze. I don't have a Lama Ba, I'm entitled to Lama Ze. What kind of a Lama Ze can I have if my nation's about to be, I don't have a Megillah yet, you look in the Loshen there, what kind of Olam HaZeh am I going to have if my whole people is going to be killed and wiped out? There was a Taina to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We all know, I mentioned last week, Hashem Tzilchal Yad Yeminecho. Hashem conducts himself like a mirror to us. The buttons we push down here go up and he responds Midah Keneged Midah. Now, Kosh Baruch Hu is very strong and a Kosh Baruch Hu can bear a lot. But if we would feel the Tzar, we would feel the Tzar of Klal Yisrael. I'm talking about the Tzar of the Shechina. That's already, anybody who knows how to feel the Tzar of the Shechina, please let me know how you do that. Very, 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 that's what a person's supposed to feel now. That the Ika void of this period is feeling the Tzar of the Shechina that's in Golos. I don't know what that means. I don't know. I'm not shakas to that. It's a very, very hard argument. But if we'd at least feel the Tzar of Klal Yisrael, Tzar of Klal Yisrael, if we feel the Tzar of Klal Yisrael, we'll turn around to Kosh Baruch and say, Kosh Baruch, I can't bear it anymore. I can't anymore. I just actually cannot bear the Tzar of Klal Yisrael anymore. Then could be that a Kosh Baruch is very strong and can bear a lot, but he'll be forced. He'll be forced to respond the way we're responding. And he'll be forced to say, I also can't bear it anymore, and that'll be the Gula. Just a hemshech from last week, and perhaps a hakdama to what I want to talk about this week. The biggest obstacle that faces us in avoidus Hashem, in avoidus Amidas, in avoidus anything, is a very small sugya called Shoichad, bribery. Shoichad. Gemara is full of examples, Tanoim, Amoraim, who were we see how they fled from Sheikhad. Rabbi Shmuel, the famous example of Rabbi Shmuel, he had an oris, he had a sharecropper who used to every Erev Shabbos bring him his chelek of what he was entitled to from his field. And one day he came earlier, he came on Thursday, so he asked him, why are you early? So he said, I'm on my way to a Din Torah, and I thought on the way to the Din Torah, I'll pop in and give it, so I don't have to come twice. I came and gave it to him early. Rabbi Shmuel said, I can't be involved in this mishpat because I have a negiah. I already have an atir towards you because you brought me the stuff a day early. The next day, Rabbi Shmuel was walking past the Beis Din and he heard the court case going on, the mishpat going on there, whatever, and he felt himself being led to being looking for ways to be Don Lekav Schus, this guy that was in the mishpat, the sharecropper that had brought him his crops. Rabbi Shmuel said, how great is Shoichod, that I who never took anything, and even if I'd taken, I took what was mine. I didn't take anything, I just got what was mine. And I recused myself, I didn't want to have anything to do with it. And I was being, and we're talking about Rabbi Shmuel, I was being led in a certain area, a certain direction. So then, how much so we see how much there is the koyach of Shoichad. So what's that got to do with me? First of all, I'm not a dayan, I'm not a judge, I'm not paskining based in him. So, and bribery, so I don't take bribery, whatever, you're right, there's subtle briberies here and there, whatever. It's not true. Not true. We have a thing called Shoichad, which is anatias, our vested interests, anagias. Anagias, the things we want, represent an enormous amount of Shoichad. Enormous amount of Shoichad. There's a bribery there that twists us. When we come to look at a situation, when we come to make a decision, when we come to do a cheshbon nefesh, where am I really holding? So the natia generally tends to cloud my thinking and to twist my thinking, and sometimes very subtly you won't even know it. There's a halacha that the kohen gadol can't sit on the beis din that decides to make the year leap year or not. The ibur ha-chodesh. Kohen gadol can't sit on there. Why not? The one who says because of tzina, because of cold. What's the problem? If they'll make an Ibu Chodesh, they'll make a leap year, they'll add another Chodesh. Yom Kippur will come out later than it would normally have. It's already getting much colder then. You're already, Tishrei is a month later, already getting much colder. And on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol's got to do all his mikveh and whatever, and he's going to be cold, and because of that, you can't put him on. We're talking about the Kohen Gadol here. We're talking about the Kohen Gadol. We're talking about somebody who's going to the Kodesh HaKadoshim in Yom Kippur. You're going to tell me that he's going to be dishonest and twist the halacha because worried about it at all because he wants to go to a hot mikveh? What are you talking about? How do you understand this? The Kohen Gadol, we worried about the Kohen Gadol going to twist the halacha because he wants a warm mikveh? So obviously, he would never do that. But the Torah is telling us that there's a natir there, there's a nagir there, yeah, that even he doesn't know about. But it's there. And you have to be aware of it. He would never sit there and say, you know what, cult of mikveh, not for me. So you know what, okay, we'll twist our lock a little bit, we won't have any leap year this year. That's not what he's talking about. He won't even know that that's what's going on. He won't even know that's what's going on. And it's a frightening thing, because how does a person ever know that he's being objective? How does a person ever know that what he's doing is correct or not? I'm full of stories today, but the stories are so illustrative. The famous Maisa by the Shach, someone heard the Maisa. The Shach once had a Din Torah. So the adversary said to him, what chance do I have in a Din Torah with the Shach? Who's going to paskin against the Shach? So the Shach says, not a problem, let's go to a town where nobody knows who I am. They've never heard of me. Shach wasn't famous in those days. We'll go somewhere no one heard of me, and we'll have the Din Torah there. Problem. So off they went, they found a town where nobody knew the Shach, and they went and they had a Din Torah. And they're off paskin against the Shach. So he asked the Rav, what's the basis of your psak? What did you base it on? So he said, there's a new sefer that just came out called the Shach. It's Mefurish Shach, then I'm right. Shach let out a groan. They said he let out as a groan, and he said, oi, the koiches of Nagia. You see the power of Nagia, that my own psakim I couldn't apply when I was in that. We're talking about the Heilige Shach, not the Shach. There's a problem with the story, by the way. Anybody knows anything about history, is the Shach Sefer on Kodesh and Mishpat was published after he was Nifta. So what's the Teretz? Is he Sefer Yeridah was published before he was Nifta? So it could be that it was based on a Shach. Whatever the Maisa, whether it, whatever, is it's a famous Maisa. Everyone knows the Maisa. But the bottom line is that it's, that's a Pachad. The Nagir is very, very dangerous. So the Maisa, okay, of this. Two things a person has to know here. The first one is you have to be aware of the fact that I'm not objective. First, have to accept that. I'm not objective. I don't know what's swaying me here. You have to get in touch with it. I'm not going to tell the Meiser again. You all know the Meiser of the altar's push button umbrella, yeah? The altar was aware of what was driving him, he was aware of his negias. That can only come through learning Musa. There is no other way of becoming aware of what really motivates us and what really drives us other than learning Musa and learning it properly. The way it's meant to be learned. To get in touch with why do I really want this? And then to go deep and say, yeah, but why do I really want that? And why do I really want this? And to track it down and get down to the shortest of what's really driving me, it's only with a persistent, ongoing avoider in Musa. And the second aspect of this is aselach harav. Person has to have a rav. If a person's going to go through this world on his own, first of all, if he's learning Torah on his own, he's not learning Torah from a rav. Rav Volbi says he's not learning Torah. He's going to get to Shemayim and Mayav Esrim, and he's going to want schaf all the Torah he was learning, and Rav Volbi says he's not going to get any schaf for Torah because it wasn't Torah. Torah is only Torah when it's a Masorah. Torah is only Torah when it's handed down with a Masorah. That doesn't mean 24 hours a day sitting learning with a Rav. It means he's learning, he's been guided by a Rav. What he's learning, how he's learning is affecting his growth, what he's doing, and the Rav's telling him, don't learn, do this, when he has to make time for Panasa, all that, that's been guided by Das Torah. Then his Torah is Torah, Volbi says. You can have two Chavrusas learning together, Volbi says. Two Chavrusas learning the same Masechta, the same times, the same as whatever, he says, the ones Chutz mi Machane Torah Lagamre. He's outside the Machane Torah Lagamre. He's not learning from a Rav. He might even be going to the Rav Shir. He might even be sitting in Shir. But that's not called learning from a Rav. Learning from his Rav is he's meshubed himself completely to a Rav. He completely understands that this Rav knows more than him, and that this Rav knows what's good for him, and he's meshubed himself to a Rav, and he goes with the Rav. That's us learning. I'm not talking about what I'm talking about now. But when it comes to being objective in life decisions, not necessarily ruchnistika decisions, even in gashmistika decisions, choose this job over this job, or choose this or that. I'm not talking about what color you paint your house. That you need a rebbe for, not a rav. That's something else. Yeah? That a person has to take a chras for his own life also. The rav's not there to live your life either. The rav's there to build you. He's not there to tell you what to do all the time. He's there to make sure that you're being objective and that you're making healthy decisions, that you're prioritizing correctly. He's not there to tell you what to do. He's there to build you. But without that, besides the fact that his Torah is not called Torah, but he's going to find himself being led astray. He's going to find himself being led astray by his negias, and it's very subtle. It's very, very subtle, very subtle. The gashmistik negias a person can identify. Yeah. It's the ruchnistik negias that are sometimes very hard to identify as being krum. When he should be speaking to his wife for 5 minutes and he's got his nose in a Gemara. It's one small example. Those frum negias can be very, very, very dangerous. Person has to have a rov. And once again, there's levels here. First of all, a person has to know that he's tachat the shlita of the Gedol Yisrael. Starts with that. Why? Because they hold the Masorahs. The Masorahs are Torah that came from Moshe. Moshe kibul misayin of Masri Yeshua, of Yeshua is a Kadim. That process continues today. That Mishnah ends there because of a question of timing, but that Mishnah continues. It used to be in the Beis Midrash, a list of the whole Masorah from Moshe all the way down to Reb Zelig. Unbroken line of tradition. To Reb Jacobson, unbroken line of tradition. From Moshe Rabbeinu all the way down. That one needs to connect to that. One needs to connect to that ladder back to Moshe Rabbeinu. That's not even a question. It's Meshubet to the Gedol Yisrael. And who are the Gedol Yisrael? The Gedol Yisrael are who the Gedol Yisrael say the Gedol Yisrael are, not who the Hamoin Am votes for. Or the politicians decide is going to be the chief rabbi. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about he's the Gadol Ador because the Gedol Yador say he's the Gadol Ador. The gifter ones. We're talking about Rav Shach. There was a certain person who had been speaking quite harshly against Rav Shach. But he called Rav Shach a tzaddik. This person was talking about Rav Shach, mentioned a tzaddik. And I remember Gifter saying, how does he know Rav Shach is a tzaddik? To know someone's a tzaddik, you first have to be a tzaddik. You can't label someone a tzaddik if you're not a tzaddik, because how would you know what a tzaddik is if you're not one? The Gedolim are those people that the Gedolim say are Gedolim, not who the people put on a pedestal and say, he's the God Lador. He's not who the God Lador is. The God Lador is who the other Gedolim say is the God Lador. And that's where we have to have a connection with. It's very hard to have a direct personal connection with them. Nachinami. You don't have to rough to Reb Chaim or to Reb Amleb for every little question here. First of all, it's difficult, and second of all, is you're preventing him from sitting and learning, which is why we respect him so much. The person has to have a Rav who has Shaykhus to the Gedol Yisrael, who's learned from them as a Talmud of them, that you can go to and speak out these issues with. If he feels he's not qualified to Paskin, or he doesn't know what's going on, he'll speak to Reb Amleb. or he'll send you there. Some of the requirements for having a Rav, first of all, he has to have time for you. If you have a Rav who doesn't have time for you, so what do you gain? What do you gain? It's not the Urim V'Tumim. He has to understand where you're coming from. He has to have time to get into your Kishkas. He has to have time to understand what this problem is. He has to know what the family dynamic is. Can't just 30 second it. It's got to be someone who's got time for you, someone that understands your language, that you can talk with. Otherwise, there's room for misunderstandings. I'm going to speak to Rov and he doesn't understand what I'm saying. I don't understand what he was saying. He didn't really get the question clear. I didn't really get the answer. Then you're back to square one. You might as well just make your own silly mistakes. Why have somebody else helping you make mistakes? So that's number one. You've got to find someone that has time. Number two, you have to find somebody that has some idea where you're coming from. Some idea where you're coming from. A certain couple I spoke to a few weeks ago, they'd gone to a certain Rav in Yerushalayim, Israeli guy, grew up in Eretz Israel, Frum guy, went through the Yeshiva system or whatever. This is a Baal Tshuva couple, and the Rav told them certain things, which may be correct, but they're totally inappropriate. Totally inappropriate. He hasn't got a clue where they're coming from. He doesn't understand nothing about their relationship with their parents. He doesn't understand their parents' Machal Shabbos even. He doesn't have a mussag of what a frum couple, a guy's learning in Kodal, sitting in front of him, whose parents are Machal Shabbos. He didn't even understand that was what the case was. He says, how can you rely on what he tells you? It's not his fault. He's an Elecha guy, but he doesn't understand that your parents are Machal Shabbos. How do you want him to understand? Your parents are coming for the Chagim, for the holidays, and where they're going to stay, and how they're going to... A whole lot of bunch of Aitzes and whatever. We didn't chab that the parents of Machal Shabbos, they're not from. So while he gave correct advice of the Shulchan Aruch, what he said was not 100% correct, it was completely inappropriate and inapplicable. He couldn't use it. So you have a bit of seichel when you go asking advice. But the most important thing that you have to have is, and that the person has to be objective. If he himself has negias about this particular situation, so then you're back to square one. You might as well just trip up in your own negias. Why trip up in his as well? He has to be objective about this particular situation. He may also have his own issues with negias in other areas that don't affect you, but he's got to be at least objective in the issues that you speak to him about. If he has some vested interest for you to be involved in something or do something, or he's a Baal Shitta that holds, so then you're stuck. You're back to square one. You're not going to get an objective appreciation of the problem that you're facing. Ultimately, obviously, it's my bechira. Obviously, no one can impinge or take away from the bechira decision I make at the end. But in order to be objective, in order not to be blinded by the sheichad, in order not to be blinded by the netiyos, you have to have someone that's objective. Very often, by the way, it's very useful to talk it out with a chavrusa. Yeah, very often, sometimes the best advice you'll ever get is from somebody who he's objective. Yeah, he has nothing in it for himself. And he's not Das Torah, he's not a big Talmud Chochem, he's not a big Tzaddik or whatever, but he's close to you, he knows where you're coming from, and he's objective. It can be very, very useful sometimes to speak it out with a friend. Diktuk Chaverim, very important, very, very important sometimes. Usually he has time for you, especially if you're learning the Chavrusa, so you've got plenty of time to discuss these inyanims. There's never a shortage of time to talk to a Chavrusa. But sometimes that's a way also to get in touch and find out where my negiyos are. How come he sees it like this? To him it's poshut that this is the Derech HaYosh, and I don't see that. What's interfering? What's getting in the way? It can be very, very useful in a Chavrusa environment. You learn Musa with a Chavrusa properly. To get in touch with what are those negiyos? What's twisting? What's bending me? And one more thing. When a person making decisions, he has to know what decisions he's responsible for and what he's not responsible for. Chivus HaLavavus in Shah Dalad brings down things that a person has to have betochen in and things that he's not allowed to have betochen in. In the areas where he's not allowed to have betochen in, when he has betochen, the Chivus HaLavavus says he's tol miderech hayosha. He deviates from the right path. Having betochen in an area where you're not supposed to have betochen is just as bad, if not worse, as not having betochen when you're supposed to have betochen. In the areas where I have bechira, in the areas where I'm responsible for my ruchnias, and that's the only reason why I'm alive, by the way, you haven't worked it out now, let me put this quite clearly. If you didn't have Bechira, there'd be no point in you being here. The only area where we really live our lives is in Bechira. Everything else is not me. If I'm going to be rich or poor, I'm going to be healthy or not, I'm going to be famous, I'm going to be successful, it has nothing to do with me. Nothing to do with me whatsoever. You can't change that, you can't do anything. That's of course Baruch Hu decided. That we can't change any of that. But in the areas where I am responsible, in the areas of Bechira, in the areas where I have to choose between good and bad, and also that's not in every area either, that's what Dessler's famous essay on the Kudus HaBechira, I'm not going to go into now, but it's worth going into, is understanding that sugya well. In the areas where I have Bechira, yeah? When we walk in the streets in Ramat Beit Shemesh, I hope no one here has a real big nesoi not to break in and steal the guy's radio from his car. Yeah, most of us, we walk down the streets of Ramat Beit Shemesh, I don't have a big nesoi in Schwitzing, am I going to steal a car or not? And that's not my Nekudas HaBechira. Some guy brought up in the gangs or whatever, and he made his living, and his whole life was his father taught him at a young age how to pick locks and whatever. So he walks down the streets, he has a bit of an assignment there. He's having a real ordeal there. For somebody who has an ordeal in Hesach Hadas for one moment from Divrei Torah or whatever, so that's also not where my Bechira is. A person has to know where his Bechira is. But in the area where my Bechira is, having Betochen there is Tol Miderech HaYosher. That's a deviation. A person will have Betochen in an area where you're responsible for your Ruchnias. Give a marshal that illustrates how we think that's obvious, yeah, but that's partial. Let me show you how very wrong we go. You have a guy who's got a business. A man's got a business. Obviously, business are complicated, but for the purposes of this marshal, there's two aspects of the business, right? There's the running the office, there's the finances, the investment, the dealing with the bankers, the business decisions, the planning, the forecasts, all the stuff that goes into chokhmah's business. And then there's the loading dock. Then there's downstairs, the trucks come in, there these big crates are going to get put on the boxes and sent out, yeah? Obviously, a lot of the stuff that takes place between those two areas, but just let's understand those two areas. So he has two sons. The one son's an MBA Harvard graduate. The guy's an intuitive business genius. The guy, mamash, flips numbers around and has an insight into business. He knows how to deal with the banks, and he can tell the banks how to make more money. And he's just fantastic. But he's physically very, very schwach. Kind of like have to help him up the stairs. He can't lift the box with nothing in it. And there's another son who, he's not the brightest kid in town. The first son got all the brains. And, numbers leave him feeling a little bit queasy and he just whatever, but, oh, he's strong. He works out, and this guy moves mountains, yeah? This guy, he's mamash as strong as an ox, like they say, yeah? So what does the father do? He takes the son, the clever son, and he puts him down in the loading dock. And he takes the brawny, the guy with the biceps the size of my thighs, and he sticks him in the office, and he says, you make all the decisions. So he's destroyed his business. That's what we do. Kodesh Baruch gave us a seichel and he gave us a guf. Most of our lives, Baruch Hashem, no one, yeah, but we have to at least be aware of it. Most of our lives are spent worrying and davening and working and being oisik in things that we can't have no control of. We've got no say over. Can't change it. You go look out there in the veld where people are working or whatever, rubber de rubber the guy's life is spent oisik and toiling and struggling in something that he's got no say over whatsoever. And the areas where he has a seichel, where he has a bechira, where he has a tzelem elokim, that area, so he sends his guf to the shia, and davening, he kind of leaves to chance, and there's no hachonah for any of the chagim, and there's no hachonah for Shabbos, and it's all just kind of left to chance, whatever. But the area where he can be poor, he does nothing. And in the area where he's got no say over, that's where he's putting all his oil, and if you ask him why, I tell you, you've got to make his shtadlus. That's whenever you talk to anybody about this subject, the first thing that comes out of their mouth is you've got to make his shtadlus. So you ask him, what's his shtadlus? What's his shtadlus? Fine, then they can't tell you. He doesn't know what his shtadlus is. Because it doesn't make any sense, his shtadlus. Anybody knows that it's all from a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and Hashem does everything. And your shtadlus can't make or change anything. So then, what are you making shtadlus for? So you have to go learn, understand what his shtadlus is. That's not a subject now. But to be aware how mamish, how subtle this is, how we fool ourselves, how we con ourselves. Yayim velayla. And it's because we have negiyas. We have negiyas, we want things. Our starting point is, I want something, and therefore I go after it. Now, obviously you can't do it in certain ways, because there's a lot of, there's pressures from different areas, societal pressure, whatever, but go have a look at it. If you want to see it in its starkest form, you want to see it in its mamash, in its rawest form, okay, and you apply to what's going on today, you can see it. It's so scary. Does Chazal tell us, why did Klal Yisrael, why would Klal Yisrael Eved Avodah Zarah? Why would Klal Yisrael Eved Avodah Zarah? Because they wanted to get involved in Gilo Ra'as. They wanted to be involved in Gilo Ra'as. He had a Nagia. What's his Nagia? Nagia is Gilo Ra'as. It's a Taiva. Yeah, but you can't do that. It's Shtaykh Furish. It's Yarag Val Yavo. Oh, so you know what? We'll make some changes. Make a change here, make a change there. And suddenly, you know what? Gilo Ra'as is not even an Aveira anymore. If you stick around long enough, it'll be a big mitzvah. It'll haunt your marriage. That's talking about Chazal are talking about then. We're talking about people who saw the Shekhinah. To people who saw the Beis Hamikdash. Avada, we know that the greater the person is, the bigger his Yetzirah is, and we can't understand what those Yetzirahs were. We don't understand. We can't be massive. If we had Yetzirahs like that, we wouldn't be hidden, never mind. The Dubno Magid once said to the Vilna Gaon, if I had your Yetzirah, no, it could also be a big goddle. The Vilna Gaon said to him, if you had my Yetzirah, you wouldn't be Jewish. You would have left Klal Yisrael years ago if you had my Yetzirah. The goddle, the great father, no question. But we have to at least be honest. We have to at least be honest and know that a lot of what we do, a lot of what drives us, whether it's in our physical lives, in our gashmistika lives, in our frum lives or whatever, go check out and see how honest am I really? What's really driving me? What's really moving me? And then a person will be able to, as I said right in the beginning, if you have that, then you'll be able to step back and understand why it is that empathy that the Aptarov had, that Esther displayed for Klal Yisrael, why we don't have that. Why that's lacking in us. We don't have it. And I'll tell you the biggest reason is because our deepest nagia is to be comfortable. To be comfortable. And empathizing and sharing other people's pain and being mishtatif in the tzar of, as I said, forget about the Shekhinah. Talking about being mishtatif in the tzar of other yidden, that makes us uncomfortable. And there's a big nagia, therefore, not to get involved in it. And if we're not going to be mishtatif in the tzar of other yidden, if we're not going to go to Kosh Baruch and say, I can't, there's no more, I can't bear the tzar anymore. It's too much, I can't anymore. Then what hope do we have that a Kosh Baruch will be able to say, I can't stand it anymore? But if we will, if we'll be mishtatif in that tzar, and we'll go to Kosh Baruch and say, I can't anymore, I can't, it's too uncomfortable. We'll feel the discomfort, really feel the discomfort, feel the pain. And we'll turn on to Kosh Baruch and say, I can't anymore, I'm platzing, I'm going to put sets, I can't handle the tzar anymore. Then a Kosh Baruch who's tzilchad yaminechi, he'll be forced, he has no choice in the matter. He'll be forced to say, I can't bear it anymore, and that'll be the gula shleima b'mehira b'yameinu. Thank you.